A study was done of our membership a few years ago, right before you called me to serve as your minister. And it revealed that there are diversities within this congregation. For example, our religious background is diverse. We have in our membership persons who were raised in the Protestant tradition. We have persons who were raised Roman Catholic, persons raised Jewish, and people who were raised Buddhist. In this congregation, only about 20% of us were born in the Unitarian or the Universalist tradition. Our standard of living is diverse in this congregation. The 12% of us have incomes of less than $25,000 a year, 12%. 27% of us have incomes of $25,000 to $50,000. 36% have incomes between $50,000 and $100,000. 25% of the congregation has family incomes of over $100,000 a year. They're the folks that should contribute that car to the auction. Our ages are somewhat diverse. 1% of our adults are between the age of 25 and 35. 9% of us are between the age of 36 and 55. 38% of us are between the age of 56 and 69. 31% of us are in our 70s. And 20% of the congregation is over the age of 80. There are about, when we add up all the kids who participate this year, so far since September, all the kids that have participated in our religious education program, we have about 50 children participating. Our politics are diverse. Believe it or not, in this congregation, we have Democrats. And we have Republicans. We have socialists. And we have libertarians. We have members who have served in various branches of the military. And we have a few of us who were conscientious objectors. In this congregation, we have a mixture of ethnic backgrounds, a mixture of sexual orientations, a mixture of male and females, a diversity of professions, a mixture of vegetarians and meat eaters. We do not condemn anyone because of their age or their sex or their race or their nationality or their mental health. Moreover, I have no power to excommunicate any of you. Yet, there are limits to this diversity. Although we pride ourselves in our openness and in our tolerance, every choice of inclusion that we make involves an act of exclusion. Let me explain. Those who want creeds as part of their religious experience are excluded. Those who are opposed to divorce are excluded. Those who want a communion of bread and wine in worship are excluded. Those who oppose the ordination of women are excluded. Those who feel that homosexual activity is wrong are excluded. Those who long for traditional church architecture are excluded. Those who are threatened by theological debates are excluded. Those who do not enjoy intellectual sermons are left out. Those who want to smoke a cigarette during coffee hour are consigned to an area by the trash cans over behind the kitchen. And those who do not speak English are excluded. Obviously, we are not completely inclusive. In a diverse world, churches that try to be all things to all people will be nothing to anyone. If this congregation is to play a meaningful role in our community and our culture, we must take positions on issues. This will inevitably exclude people who do not agree with our positions. However, if there is one group that we do not wish to exclude, it is persons of color. I use the phrase persons of color to include not only the descendants of slaves whose ancestors were forced to come to America, but also many others, people who have come from the Caribbean, such as countries such as Jamaica, people who have recently come from Africa, people who identify as Hispanic or Latino, people who come from India or Asia. However, the phrase people of color is an awkward phrase because almost all of us have pigmentation in our skin. And what I am really saying is that we want people with many shades of skin color in our church. My language today is messy because this topic is a messy topic. I will also use today the phrase African American to refer to people with darker shades of skin color, knowing that all of our ancestors originally came from Africa. So we are all African Americans. Unitarian Universalists have a deep hunger in our church to be a place where persons of different skin pigmentation can develop lasting relationships and overcome centuries of division. In this congregation, we have at least, by my count, at least 9 wonderful members who have inherited a darker skin pigmentation than I have inherited. We're very happy. We are delighted that they are part of our community and our congregation. And we would like more. In all 5 churches that I have served as a Unitarian Universalist minister, people have asked me the same question: how can we attract more African Americans? Well, to answer this question, it is important to understand the place of the black church in American life. 2 African American researchers, Paulette Moore Hines and Nancy Boyd Franklin, have studied the role of the black church. They write that a strong spiritual orientation was a major aspect of life for blacks in Africa and in the United States during the slavery era. Highly emotional religious services were of great importance in dealing with oppression during the years of slavery. Spirituals containing hidden messages about the times and places of escape and contained a language of resistance. Outlets for expression of feelings about humiliation, pain, and anger were few during the slavery period. Music and the emotional celebration of Jesus' suffering followed by his liberation, of Moses' liberation from Egypt. These provided slaves with means of expressing these feelings in coded ways. Spirituals such as Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen convey these statements. The highly emotional church services conducted during slavery today still provide a ritual of great value to African Americans. In modern times, churches continue to serve numerous functions for members of the Afro-American community. The National Baptist Convention, followed by the African Methodist Episcopal Church, are now the 2 largest African-American religious organizations in the United States. In these black churches, an African-American family finds a complete support system, including the minister, the deacons, the deaconesses, and the other church members. Many churches also include social activities for the entire family. There are often special groups for the youth, for young adults, for single parents, for men, for women, and for couples. Many activities, such as dinners and trips sponsored by the church. There are various choirs and Sunday school. They all provide a social life for the entire family. Various ministries, such as working with homeless people and with working with foster children, provide support in the community. Congregants also organize health promotion classes, daycare centers, health fairs, economic development initiatives, tutoring programs, and support groups for the unemployed and for alcohol and drug abuse. Just tell a story. When Dr. King's father, who was minister in Ebenezer Baptist Church, would welcome a new member into the congregation, he would say to the member, "And so, what is your business?" And the man might say, or the woman might say, I run a beauty parlor or a barber shop on such and such street." And Dr. King Sr. would say to the congregation, "This gentleman is a member of our congregation. He runs this business. I expect members of this church to frequent his business." That's the kind of support people found in the black community in their churches. Because of centuries of discrimination, many persons who are born with darker skin color have few outlets for their leadership and their creative talents. The black church has provided a forum for this expression. For example, the father of a family might hold a low-status job as a custodian, but at the church, he might serve as a member of the board of trustees. A mother might work in a hospital as an aide during the week, but she'll be the lead singer in the church choir on Sunday. The black church is important to black families, both as a source of support and as a place to learn leadership skills. African-American researcher Elaine Pender Hughes points out that the values taught in churches like ours, are fundamentally different from the values of African-American churches. Now, our ethnic roots, the roots of Unitarian and Universalist churches, are from England to New England to the rest of the United States. We preserve, we maintain British culture. We emphasize individualism, independence, autonomy, achievement, progress, youth, the future, efficiency, and planning. The writing of a mission statement, which is a common activity in Unitarian Universalist churches, is a typical task of British American culture. And of course, on Sunday nights, many of us watch Downton Abbey. Our roots in British American culture are why we sometimes attract persons of color raised in one of the British islands of the Caribbean. So one of the first Unitarian ministers of color, Reverend Egbert Brown, a Jamaican, was ordained as a Unitarian minister in 1912, raised in Jamaica. My friend and colleague, the Reverend Archene Turner, who I worked with for 4 years in Bethesda, she was ordained in 2007. She comes from Barbados, and her parents sent her to school in England. The values taught in American black churches stress collectivity. They stress sharing. They stress affiliation, respect for authority, belief in spirituality, and respect for the elderly and the past. If we desire to recruit blacks to Unitarian Universalism without changing our European American religious culture, then we are racist. In essence, we're saying to African Americans, leave that black church that you're in, which stresses collectivity, and join ours, which stresses individuality. Leave the black church, which stresses sharing, and join ours, which stresses autonomy. leave the black church, which stresses deference to authority, particularly deference to the authority of the minister, and join ours, which stresses the absence of a hierarchy. Leave the black church, which stresses emotion and spirituality, and join ours, which stresses thinking and reason. Leave the black church, which stresses respect for the elderly and the past, and join ours, which stresses progress and future achievements. It comes back to the question of what we can control. We don't have control over whether or not African Americans join our church. All we control is our own behavior. Instead of wringing our hands because African Americans are not joining us in large numbers, we can focus our attention on learning from the richness of the African American culture. Perhaps some of these wonderful values in their culture are things we can learn from. All my life, the contributions of African Americans have enriched me. At West High School, Liz Ragsdale, same year as me, born in 1951, attended high school with me. She was really one of the few African Americans in a high school of 2,600 white people. But Liz and I were friends because she not only was in high school with me at the same age, but also she was a Unitarian Universalist. I learned about what it was like to be an African American woman, a woman of color, in an all-white high school in the 1960s. I looked up her name on the internet and I found a whole entry about her father in Wikipedia, which said that her father was one of the flyers in the Tuskegee Airmen. He was trained, but the war ended before he was sent to Europe. And then he moved to Phoenix and he started a funeral home there. And in 1952, the year after Liz was born, he used his money from the funeral home to pay attorneys to file a suit against the Phoenix Union High School system, which was an all-white high school system, and won before 1954 in the lower courts the right to have his children attend those schools where I met Liz. I learned from that experience. In seminary, in Berkeley, California, we had a preaching class, and there were all of us Unitarian Universalists, but then an adventurous African American from the Baptist school decided to take the class with us in the Unitarian Seminary. And he would critique my sermons and say, "Roger, your content is fine, but you need to know that in an African American church, we would never stick to a manuscript. And we would be much more emotional in expressing our ideas." I learned from that. When I went to serve my first church in Lexington, Kentucky, it was a small congregation, and we didn't have much money, and we had a piano, but we didn't have enough money to pay anyone to play the piano for the hymns. So I would get on the phone and call everyone I knew in the congregation who could accompany hymns every week and ask them if they were going to be in church on Sunday and here were the hymns and could they accompany them. After doing this for several weeks, one of the people I called consistently was Nietzsche Harkless, who was a professor at the University of Kentucky, an African-American woman. And Nietzsche said, "Roger, you don't have to call everybody anymore. I promise I'll be there every Sunday because I grew up in a Baptist church in Detroit and I know how critically important music is to worship." And Nietzsche was there every Sunday for 3 years for me. I learned from that experience. In New Bedford, Massachusetts, I met Jim and Linda Totley. And Jim he taught art in Massachusetts, in Rhode Island, the Rhode Island School of Design, and also worked for one of the toy companies making toys. But he had, in 1963, gone to the March on Washington and heard Dr. King. So in 1983, Linda and Jim and I and others from the congregation took a train down to Washington for the 20th anniversary. And Jim had served in the Vietnam War, and we went over to the Vietnam War Memorial and saw the names of people that he had known. The memorial had just been constructed. I learned from that experience. Very powerful, powerful experience. In Evanston, Illinois, I met an American Unitarian, African-American Unitarian minister named Mark Morrison Reed. He was then serving as co-minister with his wife in a church in Toronto, and eventually Mark took on Canadian citizenship. Today, Mark lives in Canada, and he teaches at our seminary in Chicago. When we talked about this desire to have more African Americans in our churches, Mark said, "To recruit blacks because of our own feelings of moral inadequacy is unreliable, and the results can be tragic. On the other hand, to see the richness in human diversity and to be excited by its possibilities is quite different." To see the richness in human diversity and be excited by its possibilities is quite different. Mark told me that when his father, an African American who had a degree in nuclear physics, a doctorate in nuclear physics, and taught at the University of Chicago, when he and his and Mark's mother decided to attend the Unitarian Church in Hyde Park in Chicago, they found out in 1953 that in 1947, it said in the church bylaws that no persons of color, no Negroes, could join the church. And there was a fight in the church. The women in the church, the Women's Alliance, wrote a letter to the board saying, "We need to attract people of different races to this church. We need to remove this from our bylaws." And then the church board had a debate, and two members resigned when the board voted to remove that from the bylaws. 1947. Then Mark told me about how his family joined the church in 1953 and what an incredible experience it was for them to grow up in this University of Chicago environment at the Unitarian Church. In Bethesda, I was privileged to meet Marcella McGee. Marcella, in 1945, married a man named Louis McGee. Louis was originally an AME, African Methodist Episcopal minister, but then he left the ministry and became disillusioned with Christianity, and he was actually delivering mail when he discovered a copy of the Unitarian Register, and he read it rather than giving it to the lady that he was delivering it to. By 1945, Louis entered, married Marcella, who was a librarian in Chicago, and he entered Meadville-Lombard Theological School. And then he was able to serve an interracial church in Chicago after that. It was not Unitarian Universalist. He was not called to serve as a single minister serving a Unitarian church until 1961 in Chico, California. And he was the first African-American minister ever called to serve a white Unitarian church in 1961, Louis McGee. He continued to serve these churches until 1979. And then I was honored to have his wife, Marcella, as a member of my congregation in Bethesda, who taught me about the experience of African Americans in our denomination. And I was privileged to be one of the ministers at her memorial service. I remember Dan Aldridge. This is a difficult and sad story. Dan was called to serve as minister of All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Washington, D.C. in 1994. And Dan and I spent the day together a couple years later. I had to get permission to perform weddings in Washington. And in order to do that, I had to get a minister who served a church in Washington to go with me down and sign some papers. And this took hours of waiting. So Dan and I had a long talk. And I said, Dan, how can we attract more African Americans to our Unitarian Universalist movement? And we want to build a new big African American church in Prince George's County outside Washington. How can we do that? And Dan said, well, it's possible. You can succeed in doing this. But there's two things you need to do, and you won't do either of them. And I said, well, what are they? Maybe I will do them. He said, you have to change your music. And I said, yeah, that would be hard. And then he said the second thing, it has to be a liberal Christian church. If you want to have a large Unitarian Universalist African American church, it can't be preaching humanism every Sunday. It has to be a liberal Christian church. And he says, I don't think we're up for either of those. Dan also had a very authoritarian style of leadership coming out of the African American experience, the African American church, where there was deference and respect for the ministry that we simply do not have in our movement. And 4 years after he was called, the congregation voted to dismiss him at All Souls. And that, I have a personal memory of that because I sat with Dan at All Souls, Washington, in the pews while the congregation debated his fate for 4 hours and then voted to dismiss him. And as a minister who understands we do not have the same authority that a black minister in a black church has, I understood the perspective of the congregation. But as someone who loved Dan and loved his ministry and loved his preaching, it broke my heart to see that happen. But that's part of our heritage. As for moving this congregation from a liberal community, mostly of white people, we have within our congregation, I count at least 9 folks, wonderful folks, who are African American, who find a home here, and we would like more. But can we change our music? It seems unlikely to me that we can make a radical change because we love our music the way it is now. It is an incredibly difficult thing, and people have very strong opinions about music. And as for moving from a liberal religious humanist congregation to a liberal Christian congregation to attract more African Americans in Sarasota, this seems unlikely to me. In Sarasota, we are in a county filled with Christian churches. We provide, in this space, a safe, stable community for religious humanism. When I included the word humanist in a sermon title last fall, on that Sunday that I gave that sermon, we saw a significant increase in attendance. Our religious humanism is a strong part of our educated British American identity. But my friend Mark Morrison Reed, who's really the expert on this, having lived it his entire life, being an African-American minister in a Unitarian Universalist environment. Mark says, Roger, there's some hope for us. And the hope lies not in anything that we do or we change, but in the statistics about the number of people of color who are getting undergraduate and graduate degrees in universities. And this tends to be the people that we attract to our congregations. There is a tremendous increase in the number of African Americans and other people of color who are getting college degrees and getting graduate degrees, as his father had a degree in nuclear chemistry. And Mark says, there may be an opening here, a way to bring more people of color into our church, because the number of African Americans, the number of Hispanics with college degrees is increasing. This may result in more people of color seeking us out. Well, we cannot build a community that is all things to all people We cannot include complete variety, nor can we appeal to every constituency. But what we can do, we can try to see and learn from the richness of human diversity. We can learn from these different cultures. Today, on the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., let us renew our commitment to learn about the traditions and the values of African Americans. Then we can speed up the time when all God's children, black and white, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."